T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Bucks Raptors game 2, covering it for The Athletic as he's done all season. Our friend Eric Name, who joins us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. Coach Names!
Namesy!
My boy Winks, my boy Freems. What's up, fellas?
I like it.
What's happening, Namesy. Son?
Not much, man. I'm just hanging out, waiting for game 2.
Yeah, no kidding, man. Bucks will have a little shoot around beforehand today. You know, people always ask me, when they say they have a little shoot around, what they do before a game. Those guys get in there, Namesy, and you've been to a lot of these where they go get a little sweat going before their game.
Yeah, no, you want to get a little sweat going. You want to get some shots up. Most guys have a routine that obviously the coaching staff has kind of prepared for them, but also it's kind of up to them as well, like what shots they really want to get in and what they want to get done. And many times we've all talked about and heard about how crazy Giannis is. I think he takes that very serious and, you know, wants to get a certain number of shots in and all that. So, all those guys get in and, you know, try to get themselves ready for the game.
Yeah, and it usually happens early in the morning. Well, not early, mid-morning, 10, 10:30, 11 o'clock, and then they go home and then they come back again.
Yeah, typically you want to get it done, go get yourself a nap, or at least that's what most players do, is go get a...
Yeah, nap.
Naps are huge. As someone on the NBA beat, they're big for me, too. I definitely take a nap after shoot-around most game days. So, you got to get your body right and do what you can to be ready to go for the game.
So I've got, maybe it's some bad news, maybe there's some good news in this. Chuck, I canceled The Athletic.
You did? Yeah. After you've been promoting it for all these years?
Yeah, I did, because I read Eric's last article about how the Bucks defended Kawhi in game one, and I had initially subscribed to The Athletic on a discount, so I canceled it, and I resubscribed to make sure I paid full price to get the quality work that Eric Name is putting out.
Don't believe that
as The Athletic. You did such a good job. If you could explain to our contingent here about explaining in your piece, and the video component is so good too, about how the Bucks were able to defend Kawhi Leonard and then the way that they might try to continue to do that in this series. So not only did I enjoy your article, but I canceled and resubscribed to your service to pay you the fee that you so rightly deserve.
I mean, the bad news is I don't think I'm going to see any more money because of it, but I do appreciate that you did it. This Bucks team, they going into this series, I thought looking at the season finale, they had kind of figured out some things about against Kawhi and kind of what you want to do. And, you know, the big thing anytime you play Kawhi Leonard is he's such a tough shot maker that you have to limit the easy ones, that you can't let him get all the way to the rack and you can't let him get to the free throw line. And the Bucks in that game, they gave up 3 shots at the rim to him. You can probably think of the moments in the game when he got one. It was the offensive rebound putback dunk at the end of the third quarter. It was the steal that he forced against Chris Middleton. And it was another backdoor layup that he had on Chris Middleton. And those were the 3 shots at the rim. And then they gave him 10 free throws, which is probably a little bit more than they would have wanted to, but still not a crazy number. It's not up near 20 or anything like that. So, you know, you limit him to 16 easy ones. And then the Bucks really made him work for everything else. And, you know, kind of the goal with Leonard is make him work just to touch the ball. And if you watch it, they gave 42 minutes, 13 seconds was how long Leonard was on the floor. And during those 42 minutes and 13 seconds, he had Chris Middleton or Malcolm Brogdon denying him the ball all over the floor. You'll see them running up to half court to keep it out of his hands. Just to touch the ball for Leonard was a chore. Like, that alone was tough. And then after that, I can't imagine doing this to another elite wing, but we've seen the Bucks do this with other people. I think the moment to highlight is Eric Bledsoe on James Harden earlier this year, where he just sat on the left hand and said, "You're going right." They don't go to quite that extreme with Leonard, but they do take away the right hand. If you watch Brogdon, if you watch Middleton, they're just simply not going to let him go right. And I kind of wished I could get some truth serum for those guys, because as they were talking about Leonard's game winner in Game 7 against the Sixers, I just wanted to ask him, like, you guys would have forced him left, right? Because he's so much better going to his right. He can get to the pull-up jump shots that he likes. He can do all of that. Going to his left on the season on pull-up jumpers, he's shooting 35%, and that's what the Bucks are forcing. It's to the left, and then obviously you add in Brook Lopez at the rim, who is just fantastic in Game 1, and then you add Giannis flying around all over the place, and you have, you know, I mean, this is the league's best defense. It was the league's best defense throughout the entire season. And, you know, it wasn't a gimmick. Like, they have a lot of defensive talent. And you have two guys in Brogdon and Middleton that make them work really hard. And then everyone else on the team is loading up towards them. And it's just really tough for Kawhi Leonard.
Giannis didn't exactly have too many holes, too many gaps to dive through on Wednesday night. What did you see the Raptors did against him?
I think they did largely what everyone does against Giannis. You're going to load up against him. You're going to try to build a wall. And I'm really curious to see when the aggression gets turned up, because we saw with Giannis in the Celtics series, Game 1, Game 2, he was, I don't want to say passive because he's never passive, but he wasn't as aggressive as he was in Games 3 through 5. And I think what we're seeing from Giannis in this playoffs is a level of maturity that I'm not sure everyone thought he had, because he's really doing a nice job sort of pacing himself as a series goes on and figuring as much out as possible before he really turns it on. And I just thought in Game 1, there were moments where you think of that crazy finish he had where he, like, flipped his hand at the last moment. He was going to do a finger roll with his right hand, and then he flipped it overhand and hit that shot. Like, he went right at both Siakam and Gasol on that bucket. Like, it was a tough bucket in the fourth quarter. They needed it, and he was able to go through them. But we didn't really see him do that throughout Game 1. He picked his spots. He got as deep as he wanted to, and then he kicked out. And I just think as you see a series go on, he's going to get better and better. And I thought we saw it in the Celtics series, where in Game 1 and Game 2, like, he was figuring out where the passes were going to be, where you know, the help was coming from, and, you know, he was trying to figure out how hard he could put his shoulder into Al Horford. And I think we're kind of seeing all of that here in this series as well. Like, I think maybe he'll turn the aggression up a little bit tonight. But I think largely you're going to see him kind of play make and kind of do some of the same things. And then I think in Game 3 is when you see him kind of decide, all right, I'm gonna dunk on you. And that's why after Game 1, I just kind of thought, like, I don't know how this Raptors team beats the Bucks 4 out of 6 times. Like, I just can't see a world where that exists, because Giannis is only going to get better as this series goes on. And he's only going to figure things out more. And then you get to a point in Game 4 or 5 of a series with him where he's both figured out how to dunk on you and how to get all of his shooters open and where they're going to be open. And if he's making passes, if he knows all of those spots, like, I just don't know how you stop him. I'm really curious to see how much it gets turned up tonight and how much more aggressive he is, and, you know, how much more success he has at the rim. He's only 7 of 16 on the night the other night. I think there's more shot attempts to be had, and I think there's a better percentage to be shot as well.
Talking with Eric Name of The Athletic, forget winning 4 of the next 6, winning 1. The Raptors, you know, they, for as well as they shot, and as poorly as the Bucks shot, and the Bucks still won that game by 8 points. I mean, I got to think that's a backbreaker of a game. I don't know if you're Nick Nurse, what you do differently to try to beat this Milwaukee team. I can't figure anything out.
Yeah, man, I struggle with that. I mean, I had Bucks in 5, and I can't imagine any other outcome, really. Like, you know, maybe it the Raptors don't manage to get one of the two in Toronto. But I know I mentioned that to Matt Velasquez when Brooke Lopez got that shot at his, or he got that pass at his feet from Giannis and hits that three to make it 104-100. And I looked over at Matt, I was like, I think this series is over.
Yeah.
And he was like, all right, Paul Pierce, that's enough. And I was like, well, I predicted Bucks in five before the series. And I just think when you look at what they did in that game, like it's really difficult, I think, to find a lot to really like about the Raptors and their tech. Like, I think Marc Gasol will shoot a little bit better, and you know, maybe they can take advantage of the Bucks in the pick and pop a little bit more. I think Siakam could shoot better. Maybe they can take advantage of Giannis trying to cheat off of him as much as he does. But you know, like when you're thinking of how the Raptors win, like you're putting together a lot of really good games, right? Like you're thinking like, okay, well, Marc Gasol is going to shoot better, and Pascal Siakam is going to shoot better, and you know, Kawhi Leonard is going to shoot better, and well, okay, Kyle Lowry is not going to shoot better because he couldn't have shot better than he did in that game, so he regresses back to a normal. And then it's just like, okay, well, you had those three good performances, and Giannis didn't play all that well, and Bledsoe didn't play all that well, Middleton didn't really hit shots. Like there's a lot there for the Bucks to improve as well. So you know, going out of that game, I just thought that was the one that the Raptors had to have. Like they had to have game one where the Bucks were trying to get their rhythm back, trying to figure everything out, and you know, maybe make this game two you know, where you apply a little bit of pressure, where the Bucks need to get a win here. And they didn't do that. And again, we haven't seen the Bucks have a lapse yet where they relax, so I can't imagine it's coming tonight. But you know, maybe that is something that happens where the Bucks are, you know, rest on their laurels a little bit. But it seems unlikely, right? So I kind of tend to agree with you. Like I still think the Raptors can get one, especially at home, just because role players shoot better there, and you know, you're going to be able to get some better performances out of your others. But man, I just think it's really tough to put something together where this becomes a 7-game series. Like I struggle to see it after game one.
You know, I don't expect Kyle Lowry to be shooting 7 of 9 from 3-point arc. And some of those guys who didn't play well though for Toronto, I think they're going to have better games. They should have better games in the series.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think really, and kind of what I've seen from, you know, comments on my article and people on Twitter and stuff like this, is I think both teams think they're going to play much better in game two, which I don't think is crazy. Like, I think that's definitely something that could happen. But the big thing to remember in all this is, you know, you don't just get to have everyone else get better and those other guys that had good games stay good as well. Or you know what I mean? Like all of this kind of levels out. Like you don't get to add a great Pascal Siakam game and a great Marc Gasol game and a great Danny Green game to the already great Kyle Lowry game. Like, you know, all of those things kind of work out. It's an ecosystem and all of these things even out in some ways. So yeah, I mean, I think the Raptors are going to play better, but I also think the Bucks are going to play better in this one.
At what point does the Mirotić starting for Brogdon become not a story? So either is that what we're going to see now in each and every game, or is Brogdon eventually going to work his way back into that starting lineup?
Man, I think it probably depends how much the Raptors feed Danny Green tonight.
I mean, Bogut started last night and he played 4 minutes, so I don't know, you know, who cares?
Yeah, and I mean, I think one of the things that we heard from the Raptors in the off day yesterday was that, you know, they got to do a better job getting Danny Green started. And I'm curious how committed to that they are. Like, I'm curious if they run him off a couple screens, if they do really try to go out there and get him some looks. Like, that forces the Bucks' hand a little bit. But this is something I tweeted yesterday. This is kind of where the Bucks feel inevitable. Okay, so you run some plays for Danny Green, right? And you force Nikola Mirotić off the floor. Congratulations, you've forced the Bucks to adjust to their starting lineup for the entire year. Like, the adjustment would be to start Malcolm Brogdon. So you've really forced the Bucks' hand here. Now they have to play their most used lineup and the lineup they trust the most. Or you know what I mean? Like, it's just it's this impossible game with the Bucks where, okay, we forced you into this adjustment. Okay, great. That sounds awesome. We'd love to play Malcolm Brogdon more. Like, we're going to be really happy if we can start him and he can play 30-plus minutes, because that means he's getting healthier, and that means we can use the lineup that we use most of the entire season. And then it's just like, okay, well, we're going to play Brook Lopez off the floor. Okay, that's fine. We'll just play Mirotić and move Brogdon into the starting lineup because, you know, we love both of those guys. They've started for both of us this year. And it's just like, no matter what you do with this Bucks team, like the adjustment you're trying to get them to make, the Bucks are going to put someone on the floor that they like. So you just kind of get into the spot where it's like, what are you even trying to do? That was one of the things I was talking about during the Celtics series was, one, the Bucks aren't going to take Brook Lopez off the floor. He's proven again and again and again that he can play a million different ways, whether he's switching, whether he's high hedging, whether he's zone dropping on defense, whatever it is, he can play. So you're going to try to play Brook Lopez off the floor? Okay, fine, great. The Bucks will find a way through that. Like they like those other guys. So I don't know. Like I said, there's times where I felt in this Eastern Conference the Bucks feel inevitable, and it'll be different if they get to the finals and play the Warriors. But in the Eastern Conference, it's inevitable. That to me is just kind of what it feels like at this point.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us, and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.